Corinne Pertell, you've published a whole series of articles and video on Global Post today, looking at kind of former loyalist and Republican combatants in Northern Ireland. But first of all, for people who haven't heard of Global Post as a news organisation, who are they and what do they do?
Yeah, absolutely. Global Post is a online-only news site. It's an American. It's based in the United States. The main office is in Boston. The bulk of our readership is in the United States. The last numbers I heard, I think, was about 60% American readership, 40% elsewhere in the world. It was originally sort of designed to replace the kind of foreign reporting that a lot of metro U.S. newspapers used to be able to have and have had to scale back on. So we our journalism appears both on the Global Post site. Sometimes it appears on other publications as well, but it is a standalone news site that is focused on foreign affairs.
And you bring the foreign affairs from the UK?
Yes, I am our UK correspondent. So I'm based here in London, and I report on things going on here. Also, my beat also covers the Republic of Ireland and occasionally some things on continental Europe as well. But for the most part, I'm based here in the UK.
Okay, and for this kind of special set of reports, I mean, you kind of do stuff about what happens in Parliament, what happens in Scotland. You've been to Northern Ireland before, but for this special set, you were kind of focusing on combatants from the Troubles and getting them to tell their stories and give their perspectives, I guess, of how they thought the peace process was going and where it might go in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the first stories I did for Global Post when I started this position in April of 2013. Was to go to Belfast for a story on the 15th, what was then the 15th anniversary of the Good Friday Agreement. And I spoke with a number of different people at that time. I also had a chance to speak with, I went to a conference organized by the Community Foundation of Northern Ireland, and spoke with some representatives from Coistia, and also some representatives from Loyalist ex-prisoner groups as well. And I remember just being very struck by this, you know, this group of people who had obviously played these very instrumental roles in the peace process, you know, since 1998, you know, but who also it's a very interesting cohort of people who are sort of approaching pension age. A lot of people, you know, obviously do not have pensions, are, you know, facing sort of retirement with maybe a, you know, specific set of problems related to their, mm-hmm. you know, imprisonment or, you know, or their background. And, you know, I also found it just very interesting to learn how people's sort of perspectives on conflict changes as sort of, you know, wars end, time moves on, you know, people, you know, change in terms of, you know, their own maturity, their own sort of perspective on things. It was just a subject that I had, you know, continued to think about over the years. And so earlier this, you know, I talked with my editors earlier this year and decided to earlier this year return to Belfast to speak with people on this subject.
And it's a subject that I think locally we, I can only remember kind of two or three occasions when kind of ex-combatants have actually been in a room sitting at the front willing to speak about stuff. They'll kind of speak privately often, but
yeah.
We don't often kind of get a group together, and which you did kind of individually. You kind of spoke to many to do that. Was it difficult getting access?
You know, it took some time. I was speaking with people by phone for a couple of months prior to the actual video shoot. I went up there just by myself. My colleague Mark Oldmans is the videographer who shot the documentary. We went out there in May, but I went out there by myself in April to meet with people to explain what we were doing. You know, I spoke with some people who were comfortable, you know, maybe speaking with me and telling me their story, but preferred not to be on film. You know, some people who are in different walks of life now and would prefer not to be, you know, speak publicly about certain parts of their past. You know, but over time of just, you know, speaking to people and trying to be as transparent and clear as possible about, you know, who we were, what kinds of questions we would be asking, what kinds of subjects we would not be covering, and made clear this was not an investigation into what things people had or had not done during the Troubles. It was an issue about, you know, I wanted to know more about what their perspective on that time of their life was now. Some people very, very generously and oftentimes very courageously agreed to speak with us. And, you know, I, you know, cannot be grateful enough for, you know, the men and women in both who appear in the video, who are quoting the story, and then other people who we spoke to who, you know, may or may not have actually, you know, who may not be in the final cut, but who very generously shared their time and perspective. We're very open with us.
As an outsider, you'll come to this with a different perspective to those of us who were caught up in it and kind of grew up with it. But, I mean, you probably grew up with the tail end of the conflict and the emerging peace process as kind of international news, maybe, and finally from Northern Ireland kind of thing. Did you expect to hear the kind of things that you heard? I mean, having seen the kind of the effect of the Troubles on screen when you met people and they heard their reflections kind of 20, 30 years on, was it surprising? Was it in line with what you had expected?
Yeah, you know, yes and no. I mean, as you said, you know, I became sort of aware of Northern Ireland, you know, towards the end of the active conflict there. You know, I think in the United States as well, it's a very simplified version. At times, you know, even, you know, I think within certain parts of particularly Irish America, at times even a very romantic view of this conflict. And it's a very, you know, obviously, you know, even upon sort of cursory examination, you realize it's much more complicated than the sort of narrative that, you know, it appears to be kind of from afar. In terms of, you know, being surprised by things people said, obviously it is, you know, it is quite powerful to hear people describe actions that they undertook at the time that they, you know, may feel regretful about now or, mm-hmm. You know, or perhaps not. It gave me quite a bit more sympathy for how, just how volatile, you know, much of Belfast was, particularly working class or poor areas were for a very long time. I think more than it's, I just find it very interesting to see how people's perspectives on, you know, on violence, on, you know, political violence changes over time. You know, there's obviously a great deal of coverage of terrorism now, and we see a lot of those same words and language that was used to describe the IRA and the other paramilitary groups at the time, you know, being employed today as sort of these are madmen, these are brave, but it's not mad, it's not crazy in the sense that there is a reason, there is a very, you know, sort of clear reason in someone's head at the time for why they're doing the things that they're doing. And that sort of ideology may or may not change over time. And it was very, I found it fascinating to hear someone explain in detail how they came to that sort of set of beliefs at the time and how that set of beliefs has evolved over time of how you know, for a lot of people are now maintaining both their, you know, still believe in the political cause at, mm-hmm. you know, that they espouse then, but perhaps very different feelings on the methods used to, that are appropriate to use to advance that.
One of the accompanying pieces that goes with the video, you kind of look at the war on terror nearly and look at the Troubles and compare it or ask what does it say into other conflicts around the world?
Yes, that is one of the things that we looked at there.
And do you think it compares well? I mean, is it a useful comparison?
Yeah, and that is a question that we sort of, you know, both myself, my editor, and I went back and forth on a lot as well. I think that it is worthwhile looking. Obviously, as you know, as many people pointed out to me that these are very different conflicts in terms of their you know, obviously their scope. Just simple recruitment, you know, a organization like the Islamic State has now access to, you know, much more access globally to sympathizers, it's not a physically or geographically localized conflict, mm-hmm. In the way that the Troubles were. But where we did see some very interesting parallels were in the sort of treatment and responses of the Irish community in Britain then and the Muslim community in Britain now, sort of this sense that both from you know, kind of politicians' language and from the sort of behavior of, you know, residents and just sort of, you know, kind of fellow citizens, the sense of being made to feel a bit other, a bit sort of, you know, the sense of being made to feel, you know, collectively held responsible for the actions of a very few. Those things translated quite, you know, there was a lot of similarities there, even mm-hmm. if the actual conflict is a little bit different, is quite different.
You chose to kind of focus on what we might call paramilitary combatants, folk from loyalist groups and Republicans. Others, I mean, you could have a whole conference in Northern Ireland looking at who all were the combatants, who were all the players. But you chose not to focus on those from the state, from kind of the army or the police who were involved.
In this video and this set of theories did not delve into kind of state players and state state actors. Mm-hmm. And I think for
15 minutes you can't do everything.
Part of it is 15 minutes you can't do everything, to sort of also explain to an audience that, you know, that is something that, if, you know, certainly with more time to be able to focus kind of more on that very important element of it. You know, I think I wanted to, you know, also part of what I was interested in looking at here was some of the issues that are facing former paramilitaries, which are quite different from people who were part of the state. Where if you were part of the state security forces, you currently have a pension. They have not struggled with unemployment since the end of the conflict, and those are things that are unique to mm-hmm. the former combatants in the paramilitary groups.
Yeah. If people want to find out more, if they go to globalpost.com, they should be able to find the When Terror Gets Old.
Absolutely.
Series.
Right now, definitely, if you go to globalpost.com, you will see the When Terror Gets Old story is on our homepage. And so that's probably the best way to access it right now is just straight at globalpost.com. The full series is called When Terror Gets Old, and that link should be live for a very long time.
And if people want to find out a kind of an American view on what's happening in the UK, if they can follow you on Twitter, you're, I suppose, in real life and on Twitter, you're Corinne Pertil, which is Corinne with one R and two N's.
Yes, it's at Corinne Pertil, Corinne Pertil. So that's my Twitter handle.
Many thanks for your time today.
Thank you, Alan. I really appreciate it.